Navy in 1950, met Christ during the Korean War on the east coast of Korea, and that's where I first met Bob Boardman. That's where I was introduced to the Navigators and began to grow in Christ. Unfortunately, due to my background, I didn't understand heart relationships, and my Christian life for 30-some years, although I faithfully had quiet times regularly, my Christian life was mental and not heart. You know, Matthew 22:37 says, love God with your heart, mind, and soul. I didn't understand that. And so it's only about the last 8 years that I've really developed a heart relationship with God, where I've become a friend with God, and I can say I'm more excited about God today, I'm more excited about life, and I feel more positive about the future than ever before. So I share that with you and encourage you that God does really want to make life exciting. One of the first verses I came across in the Navy was John 10:10, that Jesus came that life might be worthwhile living. I said, wow, if that's right, that's what I want. And to top it off, I was just married 2 months ago. My first wife died 8 years ago, and her husband died 16 years ago. After my first wife died, I retired at 65, and I said, God, you've been good to me. I'll go anywhere in the world you want me to go and do whatever you want me to do. And interesting, in my part of the country, which is Oregon, they have a lot of strawberries there. And I know some strawberry farmers, and the strawberry farmers, they soon discern, well, this guy's good tractor driver, this guy's good picking, this guy's good weighing strawberries, and so on. So that, my father knows my gifting. And my father knows where the harvest is, where he sent me. And guess where he sent me? Uzbekistan, that's right. A wonderful opportunity, because I perfectly fit the opportunity. What I've been doing is helping the students to learn to practice speaking the English language. The Uzbeks know that English is the language of the world, so a lot of them in the first grade, they began learning grammar and how to write. So I'm so grateful I didn't have to teach grammar. So all I have to do is stand up and talk. And I use books like The Book of Virtues by William Bennett, Reader's Digest, and classical movies like Anne of Green Gables. And primarily those in other class, other subjects I came up with. But wonderful relationships are really very open, and I'll share with you later on some of the things that God did in changing lives of people. I know you've heard lots of things this weekend, and I know you've been to lots of conferences, you get lots of notes, and how often do we make use of those? So I want to remind us today, it's not what I say that really is important, but what does the Spirit of God say to you? And I thought we might take a minute even to think about, or some response from you, how do you sense the Spirit of God is speaking to your own life at times? How do you feel it? How do you sense it? Is it a big noise? Or?
When I read a verse and it means something new to me that I never have thought of before, God just...
That's a good clue. When the Spirit of God wants to emphasize something to you, He'll do that. What are some other things that you've experienced? How does the Spirit of God make real to you some of these things? Keith?
Sometimes I will hear two or three people talk about the same principle within a short period of time. It's like, aha.
Good. That's another clue. Okay, remember the story of Elijah? How did Elijah hear the voice of God? What was it? Still, small voice. There was lightning and thunder, and we'd say bands beating and all kinds of noise and loud preaching. But it wasn't that way. And that's why I think it's difficult for us, it was for me, to learn to discern the still, small voice of the Spirit of God. But I can tell you the last about 6 years, I've understood the role and function of the Spirit more. As I look back in the ministry over in Uzbekistan, I wonder, why are all these good things happening? All of a sudden it dawned on me, that's the work of the Spirit of God. Because I'd prayed, Lord, I'm 67 years old and won't be around here much longer, So you bring people into my life in whose hearts you're working in. The dormant. Oh, that's what God is doing. So I'd encourage you today then, if the Spirit of God is, you think, speaking something to you, you can turn me off, okay? And make notes on those things. Jot it down. Follow through on it. Because God wants to change us from inside out. And when He's speaking, that's what He's wanting to do. He wants to change us. So take some time to follow through that you will spend enough time to allow the Spirit of God to make real in your own heart what He wants to do. We've handed out these workshop sheets, and basically I plan to go about probably 45 minutes and then allow you about 20 minutes, 10 to 15 minutes to answer the questions. And then if we have time, to break up maybe groups of three or four and then for you to discuss them among yourselves some. And the last thing then we're to do is to fill out the evaluation in your booklet. And you can leave those here if you want to, and we'll turn them into the office there. So that's the plan that the latter part. Let's go over this briefly here so you understand what we're doing. The title for today's talk that was assigned to me was Knowing God and Exercising Faith in Daily Experience of Life. Oops. Craig, did you turn that on?
Yes, sir.
Okay, thank you. I broke it down. Basically, as I look at this, there's about three things involved. Number one is understanding the heart of God. That's why you see in your sheet there, the first thing at the top there is understanding the heart of God. Number two is understanding your own heart. And then it's finding joy in the application of faith. Or if you think of the formula, remember when you were in school, they had the formula A plus B equals what? C. So if A is small and B is small, what is C going to be? That's right. Very little result. And that's why it's important for us, and we're going to spend the bulk of our time on discussing really the heart of God and our concept of God, and then our heart, our own personal heart, getting in our own heart. And these two bring about the result we want to experience. Question number one here is one of the things, a quote I'll be giving later on. Says, in the book, My Creator, My Friend, the author says, God's greatest gift to mankind is Himself and His friendship. And what He wants most in return is, and you've got to fill that out. Think about it. If I tell you, you won't think about it much. But it's a very interesting thing. It changed my life to begin to grasp some of these new concepts. Question number two will be, according to your own feelings, how do you think God sees you? Question number three, how do you see God? What is your concept of God? If you're going to describe God to, say, someone who didn't understand God, how would you describe God? Because that's very important. See, what's down in your heart is what determines what you say, what your decisions you make. Proverbs 4:23 says, above all things, guard your heart, for out of it are the issues of life. And that's why it's so important to understand your heart. Some of you might say, everybody understands God. There was a Japanese teacher who came to Uzbekistan. He came to visit another Japanese, and he wasn't there. So I thought, well, I'll build a relationship with him, spend a little time with him. I was amazed. His comment was to me when I began to talk to him about God, well, God? What's that? I have no concept of God. All he knew was a little of their own Buddha religion, but he had no concept of God. But it's good for us to think through, for you to think through, if you haven't, where you stand in your concept of God. Number four, this comes out of a book by John Eldridge called Wild at Heart. Any of you heard of the book or read the book? Good. Some of you read the book. John says, and this is a very interesting statement, the hardest thing in life is to keep our hearts with us on our journey through life. You may have to do a lot of thinking about that and look at your own life to begin to grasp that. And the last thing is an application. What concept from our workshop would you most like to apply to your life? Okay, that's just kind of to prime the pump there so you know what the questions are as we go through. It'll help you in thinking. As I mentioned earlier, it's going to be broken down basically in understanding God's heart, understanding your heart, and then finding joy through exercise of faith. Common denominator is that we all want to experience joy in exercising faith. One quick person to look at is David when he went against Goliath. And it's a lot of fun to think about that. What was his concept of God? What was his heart? But you see the great results he had. Because he understood God, he understood himself, and he trusted God, and God brought great victory. How many of us here in here experienced Goliath? Do you experience Goliath? We really do. You need to. If you don't think you do, you need to recognize it. And so how do you face those? How do you deal with them? Another person to consider is Moses' life. He's one of my heroes. I'd like to die. I'm, 70 now. I'd like to die like Moses. So he's a hero of mine. Interesting to look at his life in Numbers 12. Some verses we'll look up. Others I'll just pass on over. In this case, we're looking at Moses, Miriam, and Aaron. And this is a case where Miriam and Aaron, they were upset at Moses. How come Moses makes all the decisions? We're part of the same family. We're older than Moses. Why can't we make decisions? Moses had just married a Cushite woman, and that really let them down. Interesting things. See, God heard the conversation going on between Aaron and Miriam, and the scripture says, God heard it. So what did he do? Because God was protecting his servant, protecting his work. So God came down and says, I want you three to come to the tabernacle. They showed up at the tabernacle, and then God said to Miriam and Aaron, step forward now. I want to tell you why I basically worked through Moses. And he said, normally, when I want to communicate something, I use dreams or vision. But not so with Moses. He understands my heart, and I understand his heart. See that heart relationship there. Secondly, he said, I can trust Moses with the ministry. I believe in him. And you think about your own life. Can God trust you? Do you do what you say you'll do? Interesting word. Can God trust you? God said to Moses, Moses, I can trust Moses. Remember, just prior to this, Aaron had let the children of Israel, led them into worshiping a golden calf. Could God trust Aaron? No. He showed himself unfaithful. The third thing God conveyed, I have a very close relationship with Moses, like a friendship relationship. We know each other as a man does face to face. So as you think of those things there in the relationship, you can understand why God was delighted with Moses. And you know what happened in Miriam and so on. But it was interesting what God said here to convey how much he loved Moses and why he wanted to work through him. Because the trusting relationship, they knew each other's heart, and they knew each other's friend. Let's turn to Exodus 33, verse 14. From my favorite portion of the whole scripture. It's a wonderful dialogue. If you read the whole chapter 33, it's a wonderful conversation that goes on between God and Moses. And the background behind verse 14, 33:14, the background behind this is Moses is very frustrated in one sense because Aaron had just let him down, and God still says to Moses, Moses, I want you to lead these 2 million griping, complaining, stubborn people on the promised land. And can you imagine the job of that? I don't know how many people Oklahoma City, 4 million or so? So you have been leading half the people of Oklahoma City in the promised land through the wilderness where they didn't have food and water and all those things. Tough job. And Moses comes to God and says, God, Aaron let me down. I don't have anybody help me. Who are you going to send with me? I'm sure Moses would like to back out the job, but God needed the job done. He wanted Moses to hang in there. And so what was God's answer to Moses? Somebody read the verse or give us the answer there. When Moses said, who are you going to send with him? What did God say?
My presence shall go with thee, and I will give you rest.
Wow! It's a bigger job than any of us have to do. Problems. And God says, Moses, I think he probably looked Moses right in the eye and said, Moses, if you'll take my presence with you, you'll come through okay. How many of you practice the presence of God? Man, I think it's one of the most dynamic things available to us is the presence of God. And I've been working on the last 4 or 5 years practicing the presence of God. And you see, it says that if you will take God's presence with you, you will go through it. Now, you may have challenges and problems, but what God says, you will end up with rest. So maybe you have to work at it for a while, but you come through and say, we made it. Isn't that neat? Boy, what a promise. One place where I applied this, just as an illustration, I had renters moving my house in Oregon to cover my mortgage while I was overseas, and we had a big tree out back with a rope swing on it. But I was afraid that they might have accidents and want to sue me. So I thought, Lawson, you better get up there and cut that down. I had a 16-foot ladder, and I had to get about 22 feet up in the tree. I was 67 years old this time, and go out about 10 feet on a limb out there with a hacksaw and cut the chain off. And I thought, Lawson, you're almost 70. What are you doing climbing a tree like that? And I'd been invited to speak at Penn State at a conference and go back over to Uzbekistan. I thought, Lawson, if you fall, man, you mess everything up. But it's just like the Spirit of God. While I carry my ladder down there to put it up against a tree, the Lord brought to mind Isaiah 41:10 says, fear thou not. Oh, for I am thy God. Another statement there says, I will help you. And it's just like the Spirit of God caused those words to come in mind. I will help you. Oh, you'll help me. I put the ladder, climbed up, did the job. It's fine. See, that's what God wants to do for us. He wants us to practice His presence. Take a look at verse 15 here. What was Moses' response after God answered him, verse 14? That's right. Wow. If you don't go with us, we won't go. And why did he say that? Because how will the lost know you're real? Isn't that neat? I like that. Moses, see, he wanted the world to know God was real. Or what could we say? Should I buy a Ford car or buy a Chevrolet car? Or should I buy this house or not buy the house? See, if Moses is in a similar situation, I think he'd evaluate all these things. That's what it means. See, Moses was so impressed with what he understood about God in verse 14. He said, wow, God, don't let me make moves in life without knowing this of you. Because when people see God blessing your life, they say, wow, look at this, look at that. You can feel and know that's because God's presence. And go down to verse 17. Because Moses, then God answered him. So how did God answer Moses?
Want to read it?
Yes.
Say, and the Lord said to Moses, I will also do
this thing of which you have spoken, for you have found favor in my sight, and I have known you by name.
Wow. My translation, Living Translation, says, yes, indeed I'll do what you say. Boy, what an answer of God. How positive. See, God was so thrilled with Moses' heart and his response to the truth of 14, what he learned. God said, yes, I'll do what you want me to do. And why did God say, I'll do it? Very interesting. What's the first reason? You found what?
Favor.
Favor. Do you sense in your own life that God finds favor with you? Do you sense it? What's necessary for you to feel and sense the favor of God? We don't use that term a lot. On my 10-acre farm there in Oregon, I was involved in care groups and so on. Usually in the spring, I invite the care groups out with all the kids and have a good time. But I needed to get some grass seed planted before the rains quit. Now, Lawson, you're always giving all your time away. You're just helping people. You don't take care of yourself. Why did you invite it? Why don't you shut it off? I said, no, Lawson, you made a promise. And so they were out there and got all set up. And so I found out there's a farmer there from Nebraska who knew how to disc and how to plant seed. So while I took care of entertaining the guests, he took the tractor out there and disced the field up, planted the grass seed, put fertilizer on, and guess what? It's the best grass I ever grew. See, he won my favor. He solved my problem, but he won my favor. I felt like I could turn the whole farm over to him. That'd been great. Well, this is what I think God was saying to Moses. Moses, what you're doing, you won favor with me. And then he capped it off saying, you're my friend. Wow. A great basis upon which having God to answer prayer for you. The fact that you so know the heart of God, you live so that God is pleased with what you do and he feels like you're a friend of his. So I would ask you, do you feel like you're becoming a friend of God? Does that interest you? Have you ever thought about it? I didn't until I read the life of Moses. And I saw how that God said to Moses, Moses, you're my friend. I thought, wow, if Moses can be a friend of God, why can't I? I like David. It's amazing. David was a man who had a heart for God and had a great relationship between the two of them. And reading through the Old Testament, I saw that 440 years after David died, God was still making decisions to honor David because of his heart relationship with God. That's why, brother, why a heart relationship with, as Kent was talking about last night, is so very important. It'll change your life, change your perspective in life. And I said to God, God, if that's true, I want to develop such a heart with you that you will honor my two sons and daughters and those I'm spiritually involved in. After I'm gone, you will still be blessed in their lives. 440 years, that's as long as America's been a country, a functioning country. Wow! And guys, I believe we have the same thing available for us. If we really develop a heart for God, God will be pleased. God will honor us because of that. Here's another question. That's, I think, the same question on your sheet there. I said, what is your concept of God on a feeling basis? How many of you here have really thought about your concept of God? I'd be interested in knowing. How many of you really thought about your concept of God? I lived probably 30 years as a Christian before I thought about that. But it bothered me. Lawson, you're not excited about God. Oh, Jesus, I could write a lot about Jesus. My pastor, I could write a lot about him. But if you ask me to write about God, maybe this much on a paper, and the Holy Spirit maybe that much. I thought, hey, that's out of order. Who was Jesus excited about? What motivated him on the cross to hang on the cross and not give in? His relationship with the Father. And so it really has helped to motivate me then in really wanting to get to know God. As I thought about my life, I wondered, Lawson, why aren't you excited about God? I grew up in a farm in Missouri. My father was a good moral man. He taught us to work, 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 work. That's all I knew was work, work, work. My father did not communicate. And I thought one day, what is God like? Now, this was a conscious thought. And often these conscious thoughts go in our mind, and then it's a subconscious influence for years and years. And that was my case. I determined that God was like one of those limestone rocks we had in the farm there. We raised cattle and hogs, and in the winter months we'd go out in the area where there was coal on our property and get these flat limestone rocks about this thick and maybe this big around, and we'd haul them in and put them in for our feedlot. They never wear out. They never deteriorate. Rain, snow, sleet, doesn't bother them. God is just like that. In one sense, that's true, but does a rock have feeling? No. Can you really talk to a rock and get answers? No. But the reason why I felt that was why? My father had showed no emotion. Never kissed my mother, never hugged my mother. The only thing he talked about on the farm was work, 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 work. And that's why I had the same concept. And that's why I wasn't excited about God for years. So if you've not thought about your concept of God, I really encourage you to give some thought to that, to understand and discover where you are. And it took me a while to understand where it came from. But I was able with time to understand and remember that was my conscious thought then. But see, those things go in. It affects your whole outlook then on who God is. And you're not aware of it. Another area here, discovering God's heart and God's love for you. Because one of the things that helped me then is to spend the time thinking about what is God's love? Who really is He? How does He feel about me? One of the verses I memorized that's really changed my life is Isaiah 46:3. And it says, God says, I created you and cared for you since before you were born. That's just the first part of the verse. We'll deal with that. And these were not the most important people and children of Israel. These were kind of the leftover people. But God still said to them, I created you and have cared for you since before you were born. So when do you feel and sense God designed you or planned you? Way, way back before the earth was created. God planned us. And it's just like for... As far as I can see it, He designed each of us very, very uniquely, just the way He wanted us. Psalm 139:16 says, when you're in your mother's womb, I was there in darkness and engineered you just the way I wanted you, so that you will be molded with the gifting and personality just the way I want you. See, in this verse says, I created you and cared for you. Was He caring for a name? No, He's caring for a person. He cared us all along the way. So as I think about things like this, what it does for me, it gives me a sense of value. Wow! Someone's been thinking about me for that long? Jeremiah 31:3 is another good verse. It says, I have loved you in the everlasting love, therefore I am drawing you. So, when did God begin to think about you? Eons ago. He began to love you a long time ago. And the last part of the verse says, therefore I'm drawing you. So through experiences in life, He's trying to get you to say, Clyde, come to me, come to me. I sometimes think of like a rubber band. You have a strong rubber band around something. You can pull it out, but it's always pulling you back. And that's the way God's love is. Another verse that has encouraged me much has been Ephesians 1:4. says, in the Living Bible, it says, long ago, before he made the world, God chose us to be his very own through what Christ did for us. And the second part then says, and he decided to make us holy in his eyes. Often when I read the scriptures, I look for action words or I look for verbs. And the first part says long ago, which means eons ago in God's mind, as I see it, God planned each of us. I lost my thought there. Let's see. Long ago before. Oh, God chose us. God chose us. The interesting word, think of the word chose. Remember when you're in school, particularly in the lower grades, they're going to divide up for a football game or a baseball game or something like that. And if you were not very good, you're the last one. And the guy that's a team captain says, do I have to take the loss again? He's no good. He makes us lose. But what does God say? I chose you and you and you and you. Why? Because he saw value in us. Isn't that neat? He wanted us. That's why he chose us. And the next phrase there I like says, he then decided to declare us holy in his eyes without a single fault. And I see that as like, I just came from the Northwest there where there's a lot of snow. Look out a big field and just all covered in snow, 3 or 4 foot of snow in an area we just driving through recently. No sticker stop through there. That's the way God sees us. Now there's crud down below there, but that's what the blood of Christ covers for us. But God sees us like that perfect field of snow. No sticks, no stubs there. And it's because what Christ has done. My wife used to say it's like if you look through a golden screen, what do you see? You see gold. That's what God does. He looks through Jesus and sees gold, you and me. Now, the question here is, but how do you see yourself? Do you believe that? My personal feeling is if we don't understand that truth, and if you don't see yourself as gold, as God sees you, without a single fault, I think he's very sad. And you lived under kicking yourself a lot, rather than living up with joy and happiness and peace like you could. If you don't know some of these verses, I put them down and memorize them, because I tell you, if you'll memorize them and meditate on them, it will change your life. So the question here, I think it's on your sheet, there's, on a feeling basis, how do you think God sees you? And these are very good thought-provoking questions, and you'll have to spend some time knowing on them and thinking about them if you haven't answered this question. Understanding your own heart. Take a look at, someone look up Psalms 139, verse 1. Psalm 139, verse 1.
I'm sorry, what's
that?
Lord, you have searched me and known me.
Yes. Other translations use the word examine. So what it says, God has looked at me, he's examined my heart, and he knows me. And that means not only us, but in another verse I just wrote out the other day to memorize, forgot, I don't have it memorized yet, but it says, God watches the heart of everyone. Well, for a long time, probably 30 years as a Christian, I didn't like this verse. And the reason I didn't, because I was a pretty good Pharisee. I mean, I went to church, taught Sunday school class, and on the board of the church, all these things. But I had some things over here in my heart, like Kent talked about a divided heart last night. Once, what he described, I had a divided heart. I had good plans for God, the way I was going to please God my way. Or you understand what I'm saying? And I didn't want God messing up my plans. No, I needed his help, but I had good plans how to glorify God. Not so. And that's the reason why I didn't like that verse for a long time. God knows my heart. He's going to mess up my plans. But now, I'm so grateful for it because I don't know my heart. Ken talked about some of those, the heart is desperately wicked, Jeremiah 17:9. We don't know our heart. Guys, I need help understanding my heart. I really do. I'm so grateful that God, someone knows my heart and helped me to understand who I am. And then verse 24 says, please point out to me anything that displeases you. Wow. Can you imagine if you were God and a child of yours said, point out to me anything that's wrong. Don't you think that would make your heart happy? I think that when we say, God, help me understand my heart, point that out because I want to become like you. So understanding your heart, ask God to help you. Luke 6:45 says, whatever is in your heart determines what you say, feel, and think. I added those last two words there. Whatever's in your heart causes you to say what you say. Now, are you disturbed sometime when you become impatient? Or you get upset? Or you smash your finger and you tend to curse God? Remember a kid in the farm, we used to have to fix put sheep back on the barn about 30 feet above the ground, and I'd be stretching out like this, driving a nail, and all of a sudden it hit my thumb, and I'd cuss God. And I remember after a while, I thought, wait a minute, who directed the hammer? Did God? No, Lawson. Look at yourself. But where do those thoughts come from? Or thoughts of lust. See, all of these things are because your heart needs to be redone. It's good to think about it. How do you respond to your wife? How do you respond to an employee? Do you get uptight at times? Do you say the wrong thing? The reason you do is because your heart needs to be changed. And a great verse that, if I had time to share more about it, is Ezekiel 36:26, where it says, I will give you a new heart with new desires and right concepts. Wow! See, that's God's longing, guys. He wants to give us a new heart. And that's why I've become so excited the last few years, because I see this change in my life taking place. My heart attitude change is wonderful. Quote by John Eldridge says, the hardest thing in life is to keep our hearts with us on the journey. Does that mean anything to you? Is it hard to grasp? You may have to think about it. Well, let me share one illustration that John shared in his book called Sacred Romance. Actually, his associate named Brent was about 6 years old, and his parents had divorced. His mother had remarried, and they were living on a small farm in New Jersey. And the summer months, Brent would go out along the creek, and he says, all those summer singers were there, the katydids and the grasshoppers and all those things singing, and these folk, the birds and so on, the green grass, the stream. He just loved it. His heart was happy. You know what I mean? His heart was very happy because he related to what was going on around him. He said in his stepfather's feedlot, he'd go out and hop on the steers there and ride them around some. He just loved that. But one morning he came in when he was about 6, and his mother was standing at the stove making oatmeal, and she's crying. And he felt like he should do something to try to help her, so he walked up and put his hand on her and says, it'll be all right. And she turned at him and says, it won't be all right. You kids don't know what you're saying. And that was what he calls an arrow in the heart. Understand the word arrow? Pain in the heart? He didn't know what to do with that. He says, that arrow was worse than the summer singers. Because the summer singers kept him happy, a happy nature, a happy face. But with this arrow in his heart, it drowned out all his joy, all the summer singers. He says, if my stepfather had been there, he wouldn't have understood her either. And he says in the book, the real problem with his mother was, when she was growing up, she never had a heart relationship with her mom and dad. oh, she intellectually understood being a wife and all these things on and on, but she never had heart preparation. And that's why she's feeling pain, didn't know what to do with it. That particular day, Brent said he went to school, and while the kids were laughing and having a good time, he tried to pull that error out because it hurt, and he wanted to get rid of that. But he couldn't. He didn't know how. He went on to college and was in a fraternity, and said when he was in a fraternity, he said, I made it a point to go to everything the fraternity put on because I was afraid if I missed one thing, I might miss life. See, his heart was telling him something was wrong. Do you get that point? He got involved in all the activity because he knew something was wrong, but he didn't understand it. And that's why he thought his activity. Came to graduation. He says, I walked across the podium. Someone handed me a piece of paper. Didn't look up. Didn't smile. And he says, is that all there's to college? Disappointment. No heart satisfaction. Intellectually, he did fine. Ended up with a job working the city sewer. Not a very good job after you get a college degree, wearing wetsuits and 4 feet in sewage. But he met someone there who knew God, who began to help him understand. Eventually, he came into the kingdom, come to understand. But he said, even in the book, he said, just because you become a Christian doesn't mean you necessarily remove those arrows in your heart. I developed ulcers because of the arrows in the heart from my father, and it took me 30-some years, about almost 40 years, to get them pulled out. I didn't know I need to pull them out. I wasn't smart enough to understand that. But that's what it means by arrow in the heart. And what happens, see, with a lot of people, they've had a number of arrows in their heart, and it kills their joy, their enthusiasm. And that's why a lot of husbands are not a very good husband in communicating, because they've got arrows in their heart that kill their joy, their peace, their happiness. They said, it took me probably almost 40 years of my Christian life, and I had probably a quiet time 6 times out of 7 per week. But when I got through with my quiet time, if you'd asked me, Lawson, what did you read? I'd say, what was that? Oh, tomorrow I'll find out about it. See, my problem was I did not have a relationship with God. I was keeping a habit. Have you thought about the difference? Understand the difference, sir? I kept a habit for years. I didn't know any more than that. And the relationship with God is what was missing. So, as about 8 years ago, I began to develop a relationship with God, friendship relationship with God, and began to meditate in the Scripture. And seriously, I'm excited about life now more than ever before. And God opened the door to go to Uzbekistan and a wife. And I'm just excited about the future. I used to say, oh, the world situation, sin getting worse, oh. No, God's in control. I'm just excited because my heart towards God has been changed. For me, some of the basic requirements to exercise faith in daily life. Well, let's look up Exodus 34:2. It's one of the best verses in the whole Bible on time of God. Exodus 34:2. It's a great verse. If you don't know it, think on it. Memorize the verse. Look for the verbs in there. Somebody read it to us.
And be ready in the morning, and come up in the morning at the Mount Sinai, and present yourself there to be
living God, the God who said to Moses, Moses, if you take my presence with you, you can go through anything in life and come out okay. Wow, see, that's the invitation we have. So be ready, present yourself. Another further on in that verse I like says, don't let the sheep come up and distract you. My home in Oregon, my daughter has a cat after my first wife passed away. In the morning, I'd go down to my favorite chair to sit in to have my time with God, and the cat would come down, meow, meow. and then jump up and put his paw up, like, please pet me, please pet me. And I realized, see, that cat was distracting me. And that's exactly what I said. Don't let things distract you. So I put the cat out in the garage. Because things like that will distract you. And this is exactly what God was saying here. You know, be ready in the morning. Present yourself with your whole heart. Don't let things distract you. Sometimes we get distracted by a thought coming, oh, I must do so-and-so. Oh, I must do so-and-so. If necessary, write it down on a piece of paper. Put your mind back on your time with God. So Exodus 34:2 is one of the basic requirement verses. Another one I like, I've been thinking a lot about recently, is Matthew 5:8. It says, blessed will be those whose hearts are being purified, for they and they alone will see God. So we all want to see God, don't we? But what it says here, the key to seeing God is purity of heart. Probably a lot of you have seen the film Chariots of Fire. You know the film? Eric Liddell, I just read a book that a friend of mine wrote as a biography on him. And he talked about Eric when he was in Oxford. He was in an Oxford group there. And they says as standard four things. Absolute purity, which means controlling your thought life. Lust, absolute purity. Absolute honesty. For years, I was working for a construction company, and I didn't feel like they were paying me as much as they should. I worked in the office as an estimator and lined up subs and so on. And sometimes I'd write a letter to my daughter, who's in college, and I thought, you know, they're not paying me as much as they should anyway, so I'll just use their stamps. See, that's dishonesty. The third thing was absolute unselfishness. With Selva, just married, we really are both working at being more interested in her. I'm interested in her needs and she's interested in my needs as far as not being unselfish. And it's an amazing thing. I can say I think I enjoy probably Selva three times more than my previous wife. I had a good relationship with her. And Selva says she loved her husband, had a great relationship there, but it's amazing. Because of a heart relationship and total honesty in our relationship. Unselfish. And the fourth thing was love. When Eric died of a brain tumor in China during World War II, the people who came to his funeral says Eric was one of the most likable, loving guys that had ever been around. They admired him, and part of it was because he'd set the goal, absolute purity, absolute honesty, absolute love, and absolute unselfishness. And people really admired him. People said of him, he lives better than he preaches. So I challenge in those areas because, see, I really believe, men, these are the things, the type of thing that keep God from blessing your life. It keeps you from experiencing the answer in prayer like we'd like to have. Because I don't think God responds much when there's a dirt in the water. Okay, let's see. We're about out of time here. I've told you some about myself, but let me share a little about what God has been doing in Uzbekistan. As a man, I got over 67, never been in the country before, couldn't even say Uzbekistan a month before I went over. But because God showed me to go there, and my gifting was right for there, things fit in well. I'd been there for a little while, and Dr. Artikoff, who was the head of the psychology department, invited me over for dinner. He didn't have any sons, had three daughters, two of them were married, and the third was in college there where I was teaching. His father had been Hakim, which means mayor of Samarkand. Samarkand is a city of around 2 million people. So he comes from a background of that type of thing. Dr. Artikoff could speak English very well. He learned it when he was in college. Second time I was over there, he said, Mr. Lawson, I have a question. It's amazing. Just the second time I was there. But over there, they really respect white hair and older people. So he said, Mr. Lawson, I have a question. I said, what do you want to know? He says, well, I've studied Eastern religion, Muslim religion, and Russian Orthodox religion. I can't find the answer. I said, what do you want to know? He says, I want to know how to attach my soul to the soul of God. Isn't that a precious question? Marvelous question. Better question anybody asked. See, I prayed in going over, God, bring me in contact with those whose hearts you have prepared. Because I was working on a friendship with God. I sensed God's spirit and was free to work. And so he's come in the kingdom. It's interesting, about the fourth time I was over, his daughter said to me, she knows English quite well, Mr. Lawson, you're the first person that has ever shown any love to my family, and because you have, she says, I can trust you. Isn't that amazing? That's what love, sincere love. When I went to Uzbekistan, I went over to walk with God, love and serve people, and trust God to do the work in the people. And on that basis, I'm just happy, happy, happy. It's great. It's easy to do that. His wife now has come into the kingdom, and probably the daughter Medina. Another person, Dr. Mardan, students over there have to pick cotton in September and October to help the government have enough money to survive. And I got there early enough to go out with the president of college to visit the students out there in the field, cotton field. And the last place we stopped was at Dr. Mardan's place. He was the head of the English department. Previously, he had been the head of the Ministry of Foreign Affairs that opened embassies for Uzbekistan in Thailand and in Indonesia. But he had 9 sisters and his parents still living. He felt morally obligated to come back to Samarkand and take care of them. So the president of college invited him to be head of the English department. So I'd never met him before. And so after the president and I gave our little speeches to encourage the students, you're doing a great job, on and on and on. We had some watermelon, and I thought before I head back, I should go to the bathroom. So Dr. Mardan said, well, I'll take you out to the outside bathroom. And walking back from the bathroom, it was quite dark this time, to the car, to get in the car to go back, he said, Mr. Lawson, my students have told me about you. And in one sense, my heart sank, because there are KGB informers in some of the classes. So you never know who told him. What are you going to say then? And so I just kind of stuttered and stammered and didn't want to say anything. But then he followed up and said, I too am interested in the Bible. Amazing. 26 million people that God would bring on opportunities like that. And Jim back here, Jim McGee, has helped both Dr. Artikoff and Dr. Mardan come in the kingdom because God opened the door for both of them to come to OSU to study for a while. So it's been wonderful how God has worked together to bring them into the kingdom. He did come up to, when I was in the country, he came up to my son's wedding last fall in Colorado Springs at Glen Eyrie, and I was having breakfast with my brother-in-law, who's been in China for 30 years, and Dr. Mardan, and so I turned to my brother-in-law and says to him, tell us what makes life worthwhile living for you, and he was wise enough not to use the religious term that would create problems, and then when he got through, he turned to Dr. Mardan and said, when did you become interested in God? And I never felt bold enough to ask him that question yet. But he says, when I was in the military, I was stationed up in Belizea in the hospital there, I was bored, I found a Bible, I read the Bible, and I believe anybody who reads the Bible will believe in God. And so what God doing with me brought me along just to help to facilitate his coming in the kingdom. OSU and Jim down to help him to facilitate his relationship with God. And what he said, when I went up to OSU, well, when I was there about 2 years ago, I guess, I asked him on campus, I said, what's been good about it? He said, well, I don't know what's happened. I'm different on the inside. He did not understand how the Spirit of God had brought him in the kingdom, and he didn't understand those things. He says, now when I go back, I'm going to tell my family and students they should read the Bible so they'll be clean inside, they can love their family, and love their community.
Whoa.
Wow! Isn't that amazing? Just God working. So that's why I say, as far as I'm concerned, develop a friendship relationship with God. Get to know your own heart. Trust the Spirit of God to work in and through you. and I think you will see greater result in people's lives being changed. Okay, let's see. All right, why don't you take about 10 or 15 minutes, and let's see, do you want to have a discussion among yourselves? We've got a half an hour left here. Do you want to work on these and break up in two or three and discuss among yourselves? What would be most helpful for you? What do you like doing? What would help you?
Discussion.
Okay, good, all right. Why don't you go ahead and just spend, say, about 15 minutes, and I'll tell you when that's up, and then just two or three of you together, just get together and talk about your answers and talk about your feelings. And maybe you don't answer one or two questions. That's all right. But remember, respond to what the Spirit of God is saying to you. All right?